You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
I'm Drew Leiter.
And I'm Cleese Jacobs.
And welcome to another edition of the Earth Station DCU. Tonight we're going to talk Aquaman number 41, Green Lanterns number 57, Batman number 57, Nightwing number 51, Justice League number 10, Justice League Dark number 4, Supergirl season 4 episode 2 Fallout, Arrow season 7 episode 2 The Longbow Hunters, Flash season 5 episode 3 The Death of Vibe, Black Lightning season 2 episode 3 The Book of Consequences, Chapter 3, Master Lowry, Titans, Season 1, Episode 2, Hawk and Dove, and Legends Tomorrow, Season 4, Episode 1, The Virgin Gary. Whew! We got a lot of stuff on our plate, Cletus. But before we get into that, let's talk some DC news. First up for DC news, Wonder Woman 1984 is pushed back to June 5th, 2020. One of the reasons I heard this was pushed back, actually, I don't even know if it was a reason or if it was speculation, but what I heard was it had something to do with it. They wanted it to come out during the summer.
That makes sense to me. I mean, I think they know that it'll be at least the first weekend will be a big draw, so why not do it during the big summer season? I mean, that makes sense.
It makes sense to me, too. So I don't know if there was any other reason for it, but that's what I'd heard.
I don't really have it's a little disappointing when that happens because you're like, you want to see the movie. But, I mean, I don't really have a problem with it. I mean, it just gives them more time to work on the movie.
Yeah. Let's make it as good as the first one.
Yeah.
All right, up next for DC News, the Reign of the Superman trailer was released. This Reign of the Superman movie serves as the sequel to the Death of Superman animated feature that was released earlier this year. And it's supposed to come out on digital streaming and Blu-ray January 29, 2019. Now, I saw the trailer come out, but I didn't actually watch it. And I meant to. So I don't have much comment on it. I haven't seen the other movie yet either, so.
I did watch the trailer, and it was what I was expecting. It looks pretty good. I have not yet watched The Death of Superman. I've watched the original one that they did when they first started doing these animated movies, and I think they called it Superman Doomsday. I'm pretty sure is what it was called.
Oh, I think you're right.
And it wasn't bad. I mean, it was a decent adaptation. It's definitely not one of their better animated movies. But I've really wanted to watch the newer one because it looks, from everything I've seen, it looks like it's a much closer adaptation. And also they've had, like, a decade to hone their craft. So I really want to check it out. And I haven't yet. But then now that they've got the sequel coming out, I want to watch it even more so that I can watch both of them.
Yeah. I believe The Death of Superman's on the DC Universe app. I'm pretty sure
I'm pretty sure it is. It's something that I've seen it pop up a couple times, and I'm like, ooh, I'm tempted to watch that.
Maybe that's something we should put on the docket for when the shows are off air.
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe we could talk about that this summer or something.
Like a double feature thing.
Yeah.
Review both of them.
Yeah, that'd be cool. We could have some guests on to help talk about it. We could give them plenty of notice. But I read the original Death of Superman and Reign of the Superman comic series as it came out. And I really enjoyed it then. So it'll be interesting to see how close of an adaptation it is to that. All right, moving on to our next bit of DC news. And this was news I was very excited about. John Wesley Shipp suits up in his old 90s costume for the Elseworlds crossover. Man, it was great seeing that picture of Supergirl, Oliver as Flash, Barry as Arrow, and John Wesley Shipp in his Flash suit. Man, it was freaking awesome.
Okay, is it just me, or does his costume look a little bit better than the one that Stephen Amell was wearing? I'm
Yes.
not. I really like, and I don't think that old. I'm assuming it's an updated version of the '90s one. I'm assuming they're not wearing like the same costume,
No.
but.
I read somewhere that they actually sent the old costume for them to make a replica of or something like that, or one of them is what I heard, because
I
the
just
old
don't really like the look of the like current Flash costume. It's just I don't know, there's just something
It's the helmet.
I don't know. I think but see looking at it more, I feel like the suit itself, it just seems I know Flash like this is the problem with superhero costumes when you adapt them to the live actions because you can draw them as just this one material and it looks awesome on a comics page, but if you were to adapt it literally, it would look like a weird spandex suit. And that's kind of, I don't know, that's kind of what the Flash one looks like. I know, like, I don't need the padded muscles that the John Wesley Shipp one has. Like, we've moved past that. Because Stephen Amell is actually that bulky. But even he looks like a little, like, he looks kind of scrawny wearing it. I just, you know what I mean? Like, that dude I know is jacked. And he doesn't really look that built in that suit. There's just something about that suit is just not flattering.
Yeah, I have to agree with you on that. Now, you have to admit, the costumes they have on Titans, those things are freaking awesome.
Yes, I agree. Yeah.
So, I mean, we've seen some good live action costumes. But I have to agree with you that the current Flash costume they have is, I don't know, it's just not that great.
I can't. Yeah, it's hard for me to like verbalize what exactly it is. It's just like it just if even Stephen Amell, who is easily the most built person on any of the CW shows. Can't look good in that suit, then I don't really think anybody can pull it off, you know?
Yeah, I know what you mean. And I have to say, every time we've been watching Flash this season, or I have with the boys, we've only had a couple episodes, but they've talked about how goofy the costume looks this season. So it's not just us. All right, moving on to our next bit of DC news. The Flash episode 100 is supposed to bring back a speedster villain. And I guess I can't remember the actor's name that played Zoom. He was the one that kind of announced it at one of the cons recently.
I could see them bringing back. I know it seemed like, was it in Legends where it looked like the Black Racer died? Or no, it was Killer Frost. It looked like Killer Frost killed the Black Racer, but I still feel like that would make sense to bring him back. I really think, and I want to get into this more when we talk about the Flash, but I am positive that Eobard Thawne is involved in this season. I actually am not sure that Cicada is going to be the villain at the end of the season.
Okay, because we're on the same page with that. Let's hold that thought until we get to Flash, because that was something I was going to bring up too.
Yeah, so the news of the Speedsters coming for episode 100, I was like, that fits in what I'm thinking.
So, yeah, let's talk about that more when we get to the Flash. All right, well, that wraps up our DC news for this week. Let's take a short break, and when we come back, we'll do our comics talk.
My name is Brian Foster.
Everything you know is wrong. Got that?
Now, the reason that I'm calling is because I have begun to suspect you don't have any ladybugs in your freezer.
Hey guys, Roy here. So about your car?
The darkness was never empty.
There's this presence in my head.
But I'm pretty sure that the book was confiscated by cats.
You're damn right we find a lot of bodies when Foster is around.
And some people call me the Night Blogger.
And we're back! But before we get into this week's comic books talk, we gotta let you know, there's gonna be spoilers.
We got spoilers.
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 We got spoilers.
Spoilers.
For you. We got spoilers.
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 We've got spoilers.
Spoilers.
For you.
For you.
Alright, let's talk Justice League number 10. I gave it the old thumbs up. We see Aquaman, Wonder Woman, Firestorm are on a quest to find a sunken ship that Poseidon had wanted them to find. I guess they discovered a space kraken that swallowed up Aquaman and took him to this blood reef in space. I thought that was kind of weird. We see Superman, Flash, and Adam Strange hunting for Legends of Doom's headquarters. We had Jon Stewart, Hawkgirl, and Martian Manhunter on their way to Thanagar Prime, but nothing really happened there. And then we see Batman, who should be in bed healing, but he's in some sort of special bat suit coordinating the teams and investigating Starro, who they had in a jar.
Yeah, I enjoyed it too. I gave it a thumbs up as well, especially because Francis Manapul was drawing it. Everybody who listens to this podcast knows I love his artwork. That was fantastic. That alone made the issue worth the price of admission. Yeah, it's really good, and it set up this Aquaman storyline that we're going to get into further with Aquaman, but very intrigued by it. Definitely enjoyed it.
Yeah, I did too.
And Jaro was fantastic, so I hope to see more of him.
All right, let's move on to Aquaman number 41. I gave it the old thumbs up. Aquaman wasn't in this too much, was he?
He really basically wasn't in it. The only time we really saw him, it was basically just repeating the scene that you saw in Justice League. But it was fine. I didn't really feel like it hurt the issue because we got to see what was going on in Atlantis itself, especially with Mira. It was a thumbs up for me. It was very enjoyable. I'm very curious to see where this storyline goes.
I am too, and I know we haven't talked about Aquaman for quite a while, but it was interesting to see that Mira was Queen of Atlantis now, and I didn't know she had aquakinetic powers. That I found that interesting, and she was really trying to hold back that alien water as long as she could. That's it. That is an interesting concept. The water and everything that water touches turns it into some sort of sea monster.
Yeah.
And Batman seems to be safe in the Hall of Justice from what I could tell. That must be watertight there.
Unlike Atlantis.
Yeah, unlike Atlantis. And, of course, we see at the end of this issue that Mira breaks out Ocean Master. So I'm guessing he's going to play a pivotal role in this Earth-drowned storyline that's going to be coming up soon. All right, let's move on to our next title for this week. Green Lanterns number 51. I gave it the old thumbs up. I know what you gave it already.
Yeah, it was a thumbs down for me. I did not enjoy this comic. I am glad that it's over. I'm really... And the other reason that I've been a little bit impatient with this, obviously, I just don't think it's good. But secondly, I'm ready for Grant Morrison's run to start because I am very excited for that. So I'm glad this is over because I really want to see what Grant's going to do.
I did like some of the stuff in this issue, though. One thing I didn't like was, I mean, it was kind of gruesome. Cyborg Superman using his heat vision on that mother and son. All he wanted was a Green Lantern autograph. That was brutal. I did like the battle between Hal and Cyborg Superman, especially when Sodom Yat showed up. I haven't seen him forever. And it was kind of cool for him to show up here. Of course, we see Cyborg Superman escape along with the Phantom Ring. So, you know, another writer can always bring him back at some point. I'm glad to see the Guardians. I made an issue of this last time. The Guardians were actually able to do something this time instead of standing on the sidelines. And that was nice to see. The other thing I was... thought was cool was Oa returning.
Yeah.
And then, of course, the issue ends with dissolving Jessica Cruz and Simon's partnership. And of course, we know Jessica joins Justice League Odyssey. So that kind of took care of that at the end of the story. So, but it was, I thought it was much better than the last issue.
Sure.
All right, moving on to Batman number 57. I gave this the old thumbs up. I thought the bedtime story between the action worked perfectly because we saw both KG Beast father and then we saw Thomas Wayne were reading to their sons. So that was kind of cool between the stories. And then when we get to the end of the issue, we see Batman has broken KG Beast's neck, but he's not dead. He's still alive, and Batman just kind of leaves them in the snow to die, which I thought was kind of weird because Batman could have easily called the Justice League to come pick him and the KG Beast up. I don't know. What were your thoughts on it?
This was a thumbs up for me. I think this one might be a little bit controversial for some people because he's really pushing the line of not killing here. I mean, because he didn't directly kill him, but unless KG Beast somehow is saved, he's going to die. So, yeah, I enjoyed it, though. It made sense. It made sense why Bruce would react this way. I don't know. Sometimes I find it, the way some writers write Batman, I sometimes find it unbelievable that he would be able to stop himself from crossing a line. This one, I don't know. It's just kind of made sense with how he was acting the whole time and really how he's been acting ever since Selina left him. It just kind of seemed like something like this would happen at some point.
Yeah. And it makes more sense that he would almost kill him and leave him to die than it would be just to kill him. You know what I mean?
Right. Exactly. Yeah, I don't know. I didn't really have a problem with it, to be honest, but I totally understand people that do. I could see both sides.
Yeah. All right, let's move on to Nightwing number 51. I know number 50 I gave it a thumbs down, but this one I gave a thumbs up. I thought it was much better written. Dick Grayson wasn't acting as much of a jerk in this one. It more focused on him not knowing himself. And I'm surprised he changed his name to Rick than Dick. That didn't make too much sense to me. I mean, to me, I would think he would want to stick to the names his parents gave him. And I was just kind of surprised he changed it.
But that's the thing. He doesn't remember any of that. So.
Well, he remembers being with his parents. But he might not even remember his time with Bruce. But he should remember his time with his parents. I don't know. I just didn't agree with that.
So I gave it the reason I gave this a thumbs down is not because I thought it was a poorly written comic, but I just feel like if you are a fan of Nightwing, this is probably not a comic that you want to read, was the way I thought of it. Or like if you're somebody that's you've not read Nightwing comics before, there's no way I would recommend this to you because he's not even in it. Like he's not really in it. So it's one of those things, like I feel like right now this series is really only for people who are like dedicated to reading the Nightwing book. I just can't see it bringing in new readers because I don't feel like this version of Dick Grayson is going to appeal to people. You know what I mean? Some people won't enjoy it, but like if I'm not already reading Nightwing, I can't see this story bringing me in.
And I know I said it last time, I'm not that excited about this version of Nightwing either, but I'm going to try to weather the storm because I'm hoping they bring back the old Nightwing.
I'm hoping they
don't stick with this. It doesn't, after reading the second issue, it feels like they're going to stick to this memory loss thing for a little while, and he'll eventually go back to what he was. That's what my gut's telling me. But
yeah.
I don't think they're going to do a whole new Nightwing. And we've got this cop that's decided he's going to be a gun-wielding Nightwing, which I'm not really interested in. But my gut tells me that, you know, they're going to drag the story out for a little while, and I'm hoping Nightwing comes back. I'm going to try to weather the storm. If it stays a Nightwing I don't like, I will drop the title. I can tell you that.
That's the thing. And this is why I can't recommend it to people, because I don't think it's an engaging enough story that if you're not already into Nightwing that you should read it. And if you're a big fan of Nightwing, I can't see you enjoying this comic either. It's really, I feel like it's really only a title for people who are basically subscribed to the series, essentially. And that's fine. I just don't think, I don't get the move by D, just from purely from a business standpoint. I don't get their move because I don't think it's going to make the book more popular. I feel like it's at best, it's just going to tread water.
Yeah, I agree with you on that. All right, let's move on to our last title for this week. Justice League Dark number 4. Gave it the old thumbs up. All right, well, we see Hecate attack Nanda Parbat in this. And we see that Hare Krishna must flee Nanda Parbat. Hecate goes after the Parliament of Trees. And then at the end of the issue, we see her take over Wonder Woman and command her to kill John Constantine and Zatanna. Really, really interesting issue, I thought.
Yeah, it was a thumbs up for me. I really am enjoying this series a lot. It's just a cool story. And I love how they're pulling from all these different magical areas in the DC universe. It's been very enjoyable.
Yes, it has. All right, well, that wraps up our comic books talk for this week. Let's take a short break, and when we come back, we'll talk our CW shows.
We are the Metal Geeks Podcast, and on this show, we have heavy metal, comic books, video games, movies, theme parks, and more.
Wait, comics?
Yep.
And movies?
Exactly.
Video games?
Yeah.
Metal?
Of course.
How does theme parks fit in this?
It just does. All of us Metal Geeks can be found at MetalGeeks.net.
At Metal Geeks for Twitter.
Metal Geeks on Instagram.
And Metal Geeks on the Facey Space. You can also find us on iTunes. Subscribe today.
Metal Geeks.
And we're back. Let's talk Supergirl Season 4, Episode 2, Fallout. Did you notice that at the beginning of this issue we had the classic Supergirl with the United States flag kind of thing? That iconic shot.
I'm not going to lie. The first, 5 to 10 minutes of this episode was cheesy. Hard to watch. It reminded me a lot of the gun violence episode from last season, where all of the lines just felt canned. You know what I mean? Like, they were just, it didn't feel like real people talking. It just felt like they're pulling, comments on the internet and vocalizing. And it was just... Regardless of your political leaning, I have a hard time believing that those first 10 minutes were that enjoyable television to watch. It just, I don't know, it just felt so on the nose that it just, I don't know, it just really pulled me out because it didn't feel like I was watching Supergirl. It felt like I was watching a mashup of both political sides' favorite phrases. After that, it got pretty good. Don't get me wrong, but that first little bit, I was like, "Oh no, am I about to get 50 minutes of this?" Luckily, we did not.
It was nice to see Linda Carter in this.
Yeah, I'm a little bit bummed. It seems like she's probably going to be gone for some time.
Oh yeah.
She'll probably come back maybe at some point, but on a very limited basis, I would guess.
Yeah, obviously her tour of duty as president is over.
Yeah,
I really enjoyed the scenes with Kara and Lena in this. It was great that Kara couldn't get away from Lena and her assistant to become Supergirl. At least I thought. I really enjoyed her being stuck with Lena, and Lena being really protective of Kara. I mean, it really showed that Lena does not know that she's Supergirl.
Okay, but I liked those scenes because I thought it was leading up to Lena figuring it out. And then she didn't, and it was like, oh my god, come on. How are you not figuring this out? I don't know. I really liked it up until they basically just went with her just not figuring it out still. And I was like, come on, guys. You can't keep portraying Lena being as smart as she is, which she should be, and yet... Literally seeing all of these weird coincidences keep happening with Kara and being like, this seems normal. I don't know, man. She's got to figure it out. I really thought they were, because they kept focusing in on Lena kind of giving weird looks that was weird. I don't know. I really thought she was going to figure it out this episode, and then she didn't.
So I'm glad she hasn't figured it out yet, because I don't know. If she figures it out, I have this feeling it's going to ruin their relationship, and it's not ready to be ruined yet.
It's not that I want their relationship ruined. It's just like it's getting to a point where it's hard to believe that Lena wouldn't have figured it out by now.
Yeah, I guess, but maybe it's because
I think it's for sure going to happen this season, though, with the whole theme of... And the other reason I thought it was going to happen this episode was the whole theme of aliens' identities getting exposed and people feeling betrayed by that. I was like, this is the perfect episode to do this. So I don't know. I feel like it's happening this season. It just feels like it fits with the whole theme that they're going with.
Yeah, it probably will happen this season, but I don't think it's going to happen towards the end of the season. And I think subconsciously that Lena likes Kara so much, even if she has a hint of maybe her being Supergirl, she might not want to believe it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I get you.
So, one of the other things I want to talk about in this episode is we have somebody who's masked, who's the agent of Liberty. Do you think that's Lex Luthor?
No, I don't.
Now, Lex is supposed to be coming back at some point. Because they've announced it already.
I don't think... I mean, not that it doesn't make sense if it was Lex, but I don't think it's Lex. I don't think... Lex is too prideful to cover up his face.
Yeah, I could see that. But we haven't been introduced to this version of Lex yet, so...
That's true.
It could be different, but...
I could certainly be wrong. I will admit if I am wrong, but I feel pretty confident that it's not Lex.
It probably isn't, but I wanted to throw that out there because it was a possibility that crossed my mind.
I will say, though, I am very much enjoying him as a villain. He is extremely hateable.
What'd you think about that device Mercy Graves had that she activated at the end of the episode? It was affecting Supergirl with kryptonite, even though she wasn't even near her.
It was the same thing that it was the same device they used to pump the lead into the atmosphere.
Oh, okay. No, that's why. So she pumped kryptonite into the atmosphere.
Yeah, it's interesting, but it's also raises... it's one of those things that then makes it... how do you undo that?
Yeah.
It just, as a writer, like, it just feels like they just painted themselves into a corner. Like, the only way to resolve that is to make her immune to kryptonite. And I feel like that would be a pretty big jump, I would say, for them to do that.
Yeah, I agree with you. All right, let's move on to our next episode this week. Arrow Season 7, Episode 2, The Longbow Hunters. I'm intrigued with the flash forward. Felicity gave William that arrowhead that started beeping and gave him the coordinates to Lian Yu, the island where Oliver had been trapped for 5 years, and it's also the island where William's mother had died. I'm finding that story fascinating.
I am too. It caught me so off guard. I don't think really anybody could have predicted that this was going to be a storyline for this season. I mean, we talked about it last time. We had no idea how they were going to use Roy, but I would never have guessed that they were doing a flash forward with an older Roy and an adult William. It's really cool. I'm like, so pleasantly surprised by it.
It's very interesting. And I like, it feels like they might be wrapping up the series. I don't know. What are your thoughts on that? Do you think that's what they're leaning towards? You know, Roy picking up Oliver's mantle at some point in the future?
I don't think so. I think on some level, Arrow became so defined by flashbacks, even though they got really stale by the end. Even they kind of rebounded in season 5, but there was that stretch where they got pretty stale, that when they moved away from them in season 6, they didn't really know what to do with the show for a while. Like, they had this extra time and they were like, what do we do with this time? I think they could have found a way to not use them, don't get me wrong, but I feel just on some level Arrow is defined by that flashback. And so they've come up with a new thing to do, which is these flash forwards. There's potential there for that to be a couple. They could get seasons worth of story out of that potentially. So I don't know. And I'm saying this, they could go either way. It could wrap it up and it would not surprise me, but they could also use this as like a kind of imbuing the show with new energy to make it go a couple more seasons. So I really, it could go either way.
Yeah, it's interesting, that's for sure. I was also happy to see the gang kind of back together in this and helping Felicity with protection and trying to stop Diaz, you know, without suiting up. I love the fight scenes between Diaz and John. I thought they were pretty cool. And Laura and Dinah working together to take down Diaz. I thought that was pretty cool, too.
I liked the Longbow Hunters. Those were, they were cool. I think they are a much, this is a much better example of what that sort of villainous team up the previous season could have been, where you have a clear defined leader in Diaz, who is a much better villain, I think, than What's-His-Face was. And then, I don't know, it just works better. They just feel like a better group of villains as a threat.
All right, I want to bring something up, because Ashley brought up an interesting tidbit during her little commentary last week, and that's the fact that she is wondering if Laurel is the new Green Arrow vigilante who's taken Oliver's place. What are your thoughts on that?
I don't think so. That would definitely surprise me. That would be a pretty good twist, because that would shock me.
So I thought
there's some logic there. Don't get me wrong. I can see the logic there, so I can't rule it out. But I don't think it's her.
She wasn't positive either, but it was interesting for her to throw that out there, and I thought that was interesting. So I really enjoyed her idea on that. So I'm curious to see what she thinks about it now that she's seen the next episode too. So I may ask her about that this week.
I still feel like every time I see, especially this season with Black Siren this season, it really feels like the show is just like, man, we really screwed up when we killed Laurel. And they're just like basically going like, they're just, this is like a two season process to essentially effectively undo their mistake. Because I feel like had Laurel survived, she probably would be the district attorney, right?
Yeah.
Like, I feel like this, they've basically, Black Siren is effectively in a place as a character where Laura would be if she hadn't died. And I feel like that's them basically being like, whoops.
Do we really need to have Black Siren on the show, though? We got Dinah. She's got the same
ability. I occasionally had my qualms with Laurel, but I generally enjoyed her as a character, and I did not think it was a good idea when they killed her character off, especially when they had already killed one Black Canary off. Like, it's just like, you've already done that story. So I don't know, I'm kind of fine with what they're doing, because it's basically just like, we know technically this is not the same Laurel, but it's the same Laurel.
Alright, really great episode of Arrow, and I've really been enjoying this season.
This has been a very good start to the season, in my opinion. I am really enjoying Arrow so far.
I am too. Alright, let's move on to our next episode for this week. Flash, Season 5, Episode 3, The Death of Vibe. So, Vibe is dead, at least to the outside world. So we see Cicada targeted Vibe and went through Joe to get to him. And here we go again, because I was glad to see Cecile still had her powers. Because last episode, they seemed to make us think that they were going to be gone.
It does seem like they're on their way out. And it's just, I'm just a little bit frustrated that they just didn't just peel the Band-Aid and have them gone at the start of the season. I would have no complaints. Honestly, it was like, oh yeah, that's what they told us was going to happen. Stop hurting old wounds, man. Come on. Let it go.
So one of the things we find out in this episode is that Cicada's attacks on metahumans is happening earlier than it should have in the original timeline, you know, before Nora came back in time. And the other thing we find out is the victims are completely different.
Yeah, so I thought this was interesting, because one of the things that we talked about, the two of us, was that we felt like Nora had created her own flashpoint. And initially it seemed like the show was playing that down. They're like, yeah, it's not that big a deal. She doesn't change too much. And then we're starting to see that it looks like she did kind of screw up pretty big.
We learned something about Nora in this episode. Oh, okay. Well, look. No, before we get to that, let's talk about the French Sherlock Wells. We learned that the new Wells has caught Cicada on 36 different Earths. And each time it's David Hirsch. But not this time. So we get the French Sherlock Wells. Man, Tom Cavanaugh does a great job of his different Wells. I love this French Sherlock Wells.
That's the thing. I think he, as an actor, he must just love the way they use him, because he just gets to, he gets to play somebody different every season. Like, it doesn't get stale for him.
I know.
It's cool. But I like this version. I think it's kind of cool what they're doing with it. I also think it's really cool because it seems like it's going to play up sort of a detective rivalry between him and Ralph, which I like because I really want to see more Detective Ralph.
Yeah, I liked how they played that up too. And we know this Sherlock Wells has skills because he showed him when he came over. But he was being too confident in knowing that David Hirsch was the Cicada. And I think it really surprised him and took him aback that it wasn't. So now he's going to have to really dig into his skills to help Team Flash. I think it's going to be really interesting. And I think you're going to see Sherlock Wells and Ralph in competition to try to figure out who Cicada is first.
Anything that plays up the detective angle for Ralph, I think, is great. So I am all for it.
The other thing we got to see is we don't really know who Cicada is, but we're seeing his face. We find out that his daughter is in a hospital with a coma. And, you know, they didn't even have to tell me it was caused by a metahuman. It had to have been for him to be so vindictive to metahumans.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously the doctor is well aware that what Cicada's been up to.
I was definitely not sure how Cicada was going to be as a villain, especially after the first episode. I was like, but I'm really enjoying what we're getting so far. He feels like a true threat. I like the whole idea of Barry, the forensic scientist, and then the two detectives trying to hunt down a serial killer. I think is a great angle for the Flash.
Yeah, I'm very curious what Cicada's next move is going to be. All right, let's get to what I want to talk about here. We see towards the end of the episode that Sherlock asked Nora if she decided to help Barry save the day in the season finale on her own, or if someone pushed her to do it. So Nora is clearly hiding something, and, you know, I'm wondering if someone else is involved with Nora coming back. Perhaps the Reverse Flash?
And I think we talked about this a couple episodes ago when you had Barry training Nora and they flashed back to Thawne teaching Barry, which made sense within that. But then there was a couple other times, like they showed her in the Flash Museum and they showed the Reverse Flash's suit, which also makes sense that it's there. But I just keep getting this gut feeling like Thawne's involved.
Yeah, I know.
I really think that he's involved in this.
Yes, I do too. And I think I mentioned that back in the first episode, didn't I? I thought maybe he was involved. I feel it even more, especially after seeing this episode. Somebody gave her the idea to come back, I think. Somebody had to have pushed her, because she would have had to have known about changing the timeline. You know, Iris would have warned her about it.
Right. Yeah, we could be wrong, but I really, really have a strong feeling that Thawne is involved. And I also, the other reason that I'm thinking this is because the focus these first few episodes has been so strong on Cicada, which I like, don't get me wrong. It makes me wonder if they're going to do what we've been wanting for a long time, where you kind of have first half is a storyline and the second half is a storyline. I think it'd be really great if basically the first half of this season is the Cicada storyline. They hunt him down, they finally get him in the mid-season finale. And then the second, and then in that one, they realize somebody pushed Nora to do this. They figure out that it's Reverse Flash, and then boom, second half of the season is them dealing with the return of Reverse Flash.
That would be so freaking awesome.
Wouldn't that be great? Like, yes. I would love that. You get a half season with Cicada where you have it really focused. Like, I'm not going to lie, I'm pretty burnt out on Flash Villain of the Weeks. Like, it just, those feel repetitive at this point. They're really not doing anything unique with them at the moment. So if we had just 9 to 10 episodes really heavily focused on hunting down Cicada, I would like that. And then you have a second half of the season that's really focused on a storyline there. I feel like it would cut down on the number of forgettable filler episodes.
Yeah. We saw it work with Arrow last year. I mean, the first half wasn't the greatest, but that second half of Arrow, because, you know, we had the, I can't even remember the villain's name, but we had that villain in the first half, and then we had the villain
Diaz
in the second half. Yeah, that was freaking great.
It helped the show immensely, because that first half was not very good, let's be real. And that once they finally established Diaz as the secret villain, and he really finally started to take over, and really it was more like that last third, but it was great. I mean, it saved that season, and as far as I'm concerned, it was a really strong end to what had been a mediocre season.
Right.
I'm hoping Flash does something similar, because like I really like what they're doing with Cicada, but I feel like if you drag that story across 22 episodes, you're going to do the same thing you did with The Thinker and with Zoom, where it just starts to kind of drag after a while.
Yeah.
You're just kind of like, okay, I'm kind of ready for this conflict to be over.
Yeah, I agree with you. All right, let's move on to our next episode for this week. Black Lightning, Season 2, Episode 3, The Book of Consequences, Chapter 3, Master Lowry. Man, their titles are long, but I do love the new, I know we talked about this last week, the new sequencing at the beginning where it shows you the title. I think that's pretty cool.
I don't know why they weren't doing it before. It's just one of those things that, like we said last week, when I saw it, I was like, this makes perfect sense. Why is this only happening now?
I don't know. All right, Cletus. Well, I hope you enjoyed the series of Black Lightning, because Tobias has been captured. The series is over. All right.
It was, you know, it was a really good run. I'm glad it's all over.
When they've caught Tobias and it wasn't Black Lightning, I'm like, yeah, he's not staying in jail very long.
Were you a little bit surprised when they captured him? I didn't.
Yeah.
Because it kind of seemed like it happened out of nowhere.
It was happened out of nowhere. But you know what? It made sense, because they were staking out a place that Tobias would go to.
It still felt like it kind of, I don't know, it didn't really feel like there was a build up to it. I you know what I mean? Like, it just sort of was like, oh yeah, now this is happening.
Right.
But it's like, whoa, what?
But do you think maybe Tobias did it on purpose?
Oh, for sure. Oh yeah. It was just the lack of like setup that surprised me. But I agree that Tobias is clearly up to something.
Another thing I liked in this episode, as we're seeing the Black Lightning-Henderson relationship starting to grow. Though, you know, Henderson's clearly not happy to be working with Black Lightning. He considers it a necessary evil. And I think Jefferson and Henderson's relationship will come around, but not for a little while.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm liking where it's going. Continuing the whole, you know, basically Batman and Commissioner Gordon dynamic. I like it.
I like it too. We see Lynn has to work with a fellow scientist who's got a dark past. And I have a feeling that's not going to go well for Lynn in the future.
I don't either, but I was confused as to why the agency was doing this. I got that the guy was in some way trying to prove a point, but I was like, I didn't think he was supposed to be evil necessary. You know what I mean? He seemed like he was actually just doing his government job. Maybe clearly I'm wrong now, because why would you hire a murderer?
He clearly doesn't like Lynn, that's for sure.
But and yeah, but like,
I think
you know
that's
what I mean?
Because I think that's because she's interfering with what he wants to do, or you know, something else is going on. Yeah. Obviously.
Oh yeah, I agree. I clearly had misread the character, because he seemed like he was unpleasant, but not necessarily bad, but that's hard to argue when you're hiring somebody like that.
And finally, the last thing I want to talk about, we keep seeing Anissa robbing from the drug dealers. I have a feeling at some point this is not going to go well for her.
Okay, this is what I'm curious about. It's either not going to go well for her, or do you think that the priest is going to be corrupted by all that money at some point?
Oh, I hadn't thought about that.
I could be wrong. That might not happen, but that every time she keeps bringing huge wads of money to the priest, I keep thinking at some point he's just going to start taking some of that, or maybe he already is and we don't realize it.
I don't know. I you know what? I don't really got that kind of vibe from him. So it's possible that could happen, but
I didn't either. I don't think that's
where the story's going. My guess is the drug dealers are going to fight back. Or, you know, yep. Tobias is going to get involved, and they're going to fight back, and Anissa is going to be in some sort of trouble and have to call her dad in. That's what I'm expecting to happen.
We'll see.
We already know.
One of us will get to rub it into the other.
Yeah, that's for sure. Gambi knows, and I have a feeling that something's going to go south for Anissa, and he's going to have to bring in Jefferson to help out. And then he'll be upset that he didn't know about this going on. That's what I see happening. All right, well, let's move on to our next episode for this week. Legends of Tomorrow, Season 4, Episode 1, The Virgin Gary. Man, this was a great episode. I loved it.
It was so funny. Making the unicorn the bad guy is so perfectly Legends.
Yes. And I thought, you know, that it was... It was super creepy, too. The unicorn being the evil entity was just unnerving, especially when Constantine stripped away its appearance and we saw what it really looked like, this black, half-dead-looking unicorn thing. It was very disturbing.
Yeah.
But I did find it hilarious how it's spewing glitter goo at the team who hallucinate. I died laughing at Ray kissing that tree and Roy playing wheelbarrow with Nate. Oh, man.
It was... Okay, I had one question for you because I might have missed it. Was there an explanation for Wally's absence?
No.
Okay, I thought was... I was surprised that there wasn't something in there because as far as the... We know the real-life explanation is that the actor is semi-retiring from the role. But I was surprised there was, as far as the in-universe is concerned, he's still part of the Legends.
Oh, yes. Now that I remember, somebody did mention something about Wally going off on his own or something. Somebody brought it up, now that I remember.
Clearly I was paying attention to that part.
I can't remember who brought it up. Somebody brought it up. And it might have been the director from the Time Bureau. I forget her name.
Or maybe is it...
Because now that I think about it, I think she might have mentioned Wally leaving because she talked about maybe Sarah leaving the Legends now that there was no anachronisms left. This is before she knew about the magical stuff happening.
Right.
So I think that's when it was mentioned. It was very briefly, so...
That's weird to make it such a throwaway line, though. You would think that would be more, talked about, I guess.
Yeah, I don't know. Another thing they introduced in this episode was Nate and his father having issues. And I liked how he kind of talked Roy into, them going out on some sort of little crime spree kind of thing. And then they end up just taking him to his parents. And Roy was like, okay.
Yeah, I obviously we're going to be getting a little more with that story. I'll be curious to see what they do with it, kind of see if maybe we see a sort of repairing of the relationship. That seemed to be the path that was going down at the end of the episode.
Yeah, it sure did. And another thing we saw, that Ray is in love with Nora Dark. And I'm guessing that that's going to play out more later in the season. Nora's going to be coming back at some point.
Oh, she must be. I have to admit, I still find it, I'm still a little bit uncomfortable with it, just because they had, if Ray specifically hadn't been interacting so much with young Nora, I don't think it would be that weird. But it was the fact that Ray was helping out, what was it, like 12 or 13 year old Nora?
Yeah.
And then, like, I know she's an adult now. I know it's not like the weird Gotham thing where it's still technically a 13 year old girl. So they're not, it's not like that, but it's still just like, I don't know. It's still just a little weird.
Yeah. All right. And the last thing I want to talk about in this episode was Constantine at the end. We see some sort of invisible force attack Constantine in his apartment and kind of writes, "I'm coming for you, Johnny, on his bedroom mirror. So I'm wondering if this is the big bad of the season, somebody who's after Constantine.
I think it is probably the demon that is responsible for the loss of the soul of that little girl that haunts him constantly.
Ooh. That would be interesting.
You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
I feel pretty confident that that's who that would be. Who else would have such a bitter connection with John?
I like how they're playing John Constantine in this too. Sarah's trying to get him on the team. We know Constantine is not a team player. So he's going to be very resistant to that idea of being on the team. So I think we're going to see him like we kind of seen him on Justice League Dark in the comic right now, where he's part of it, but he's not part of it.
I think that it makes sense, too, if it is that demon, that would be the thing that would convince John to actually join the Legends, because I don't think there's not much else that he would care deeply enough about to do that. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like that would be the motivator he would need to be like, okay, fine. Like, I'll join your guys' team, but this, we need to address this.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. All right, well, let's move on to our last episode for this week. Titans, Season 1, Episode 2, Hawk and Dove. Oh, man, I'm going to say it again. Hawk and Dove's costumes look amazing.
They are incredible at how close to the comics they look. However, I will say one negative of that was that Dove's costume looked extremely difficult to fight in.
But her wing things are really cool.
Yes, they
are.
Yeah.
I like how they're a shield.
It's incredible how like the comics they are, and how some other like TV and movie stuff struggle to adapt costumes. Like, it can't possibly be that hard. I just feel like sometimes they have this need, like, oh, well, we're adapting it, so we've got to make it look different. Gotham and Bane. just like, you know, it's the same thing like with Gotham. Like, why not just put Bane in a luchador mask? Like, come on. And with this, they didn't, you know, they actually just adapt the costumes, and it looks great.
It does look great. Hawk and Dove, the introduction to them in this episode, I thought it was pretty good. We got to see a little bit of their history. We find out that Don and Dick had a past relationship. I don't know. I just really enjoyed this episode. And I have this feeling that Titans is really good because Geoff Johns is behind it.
His involvement certainly can't be a negative. That's yeah, I enjoyed both Hawk and Dove's characters in this show. I will admit, personally, I was a little thrown off by Dawn because my girlfriend and I I'm rewatching. She's watching it for the first time. But Friday Night Lights, and the actress that plays Dawn is Lila Garrity on that show, and so I couldn't help but see Lila Garrity dressing up as Dove.
I love Friday Night Lights.
So you saw it too then, right?
I have not watched Friday Night Lights for a while, so it didn't register, but now that you told me that, next time I see her, I'll probably be going thinking that.
So it was nothing to do with the way she was playing the character, but this is a show I'm rewatching again right now. It's so fresh in my head. I was like, oh, wow, Lila Garrity really kind of went a different direction for her life.
How cool was it that we saw Alfred's name pop up on Dick's phone?
There was a couple. They had a couple of Easter eggs on there. I know I also caught Donna Troy.
Yes, Donna Troy's on there. Yep.
There probably, I can't remember. I definitely was a couple other ones. But I'm hoping at some point we're going to get a see. I'm really hoping they don't do the whole season one of Supergirl thing with Batman.
I hope
I would
either.
Really like to actually see Bruce at some point.
And Alfred. I'd like to see them both.
Yeah.
And I hope they do it. I hope it's not a we have a Batman in the movies, you can't have him on the show kind of thing. You know what I mean?
Of any of the networks that should be able to get them, it should be the DC Universe app. You know what I mean?
Like, yeah.
Of all the ones, that's got to be the one. Come on.
All right. There's one other thing I wanted to bring up about this episode, and that was the crazy 50s family from hell. They were super creepy.
Do you know if they're from something? Because I will admit that I didn't know if that was a new creation or if they were from a comic.
I didn't recognize them.
That would be something. If our listeners, maybe our listeners know the answer to that, I would love to know personally, because I would love to read a couple comics if they exist in the comics, because they were really cool and creepy.
Yeah, really creepy. I mean, they played it well, I thought.
Yeah, yes.
So, but man, I'm really enjoying Titans. I think they're doing a good job of it. I'm very excited about watching episode 3, so.
Yeah, my only complaint with this one was that we didn't get more answers with Starfire. And that's not a bad thing. I mean, the episode we got was really good.
Yeah.
I was just like, oh, what's going on with that character, too? There's so much I want to know.
I know. I love how they're not trying to focus on too many things at once. Yeah. You know, they're focusing on certain things. And I'm sure that Starfire will get her episode soon. And we'll find out what's going on with her. I like how they're focusing it. So I have a feeling when we get Starfire's story, they'll probably focus on Starfire more in that episode, and we'll see less of the other characters. So,
yeah, this was. I'm very much enjoying this series so far. I was not sure how it was going to go, but it's been really good so far.
Yeah, it has been. All right, well, that wraps up our episode for this week. Did you have a shout out, Cletus?
Yeah, so with the upcoming Aquaman Justice League storyline, it reminds me a lot of the one from the New 52, which is the Throne of Atlantis. I probably have recommended this before, but it's really good. It's the reason I recommended it. It's a Geoff Johns story. It's Ocean Master is basically attacking the surface world using Aquaman's invasion plans. And Aquaman and the Justice League have to stop it. It's a really good story. I am also fairly certain that the movie coming out this winter is going to be taking a lot of cues from it too. And so if Aquaman, and especially Aquaman versus Ocean Master, is a thing that interests you, I would definitely check that out.
All right, and we'll have the link for that in our show notes. All right, and for my shout out, I'm going to shout out about Thursday's episode of DC Daily. They had a great panel on there with Paul Dini and his magician wife, Misty Lee. So,
AKA Zatanna. It cracks me up. She pops up in almost all of his stories because of that.
You know, did you watch that DC Daily?
I have not, but I will now, just because it's something my comic studies friends and I joke about constantly. We're like, oh, did Paul Dini write that? There's a magician in there somewhere.
You know, they actually met through Zatanna. He had written a Zatanna story that a friend of his wife's had gave her, and they started. She emailed him about it, and they started emailing back and forth, and then the relationship just grew from that until they got married and stuff. It was a really interesting story. Yeah, you'll have to check out that. The other thing that made this panel great is they had Tiffany Smith, who's the she's usually she's kind of like the main host of the news part. She was on the panel. They had Harley Quinn Smith, Kevin Smith's daughter, on there. John Barrowman, you know, they're all there kind of interviewing Paul Dini and his wife. It was great. They talked about Batman the Animated Series, Season 1, Episode 50, that's titled Zatanna. So they were talking about Zatanna. And then Misty did some magic tricks at the end of the panel. It was just great. I think it was one of my favorite episodes of DC Daily yet. So if you haven't checked that out, you got to check that out. All right, coming up next week. All right, well, if you'd like to comment on anything we've talked about tonight, you can call our feedback line at 317-564-9133, or you can email us at earthstationdcu@gmail.com. Coming up next week, we will be talking Action Comics, Titans, Batgirl, Justice League Odyssey, Flash, The Terrifics, Wonder Woman, CW shows, and Titans. Thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next time.
Time to go. You sure this is necessary? The Guardians of the Universe seem to think so.
How long will you be gone? But we will be back, little brother.
I wish I could go with.
I doubt your mother would approve.
I'll miss you.
Perhaps you could water the plants in my apartment while I am gone.
Be careful, all right?
May the gods be with you all.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network. Be part of the crew and help support our shows by donating to our ESO Patreon or by shopping through Amazon.com or the TeePublic store, which can all be found at www.esonetwork.com. The ESO Network, your station for all things geek.